Good evening. You know, I mentioned this morning we live in a unique period of time. We are so blessed. And one of the blessings of our modern day is the ability to travel and see other places and have other experiences that in generations past it wasn't so easy to do that. But we're not the first people that like to travel. Read a statement from a fellow who visited a magnificent city. Some have compared it to San Francisco, New York, L.A., London, Rome, Paris, you know, the great cities of our day. And here's what he said about it. In magnificence, there is no other city that approaches it. Now, the fellow that made that statement was a man by the name of Herodotus. And he is looked upon as sort of being the father of recorded history. He lived from 484 to 425 B.C. So that was a long, long time ago. But, you know, that's getting pretty close to the period of time that we're studying about in our Sunday morning Bible class. And the city that he made that statement about was one that may have looked something like this. This is an artist rendering of Babylon. At least one of the gates to Babylon. Babylon, although it was a relatively short segment of history that Babylon was at their apex, yet I think, and I'm just, you know, this is just kind of a seat of the pants assessment, I think that there is more said about Babylon as it relates to Bible matters than perhaps any other ancient empire, any other ancient city. And that's why I want us to kind of, you know, focus on it. You know, it's easy to read these Old Testament passages and some in the New, and you read Babylon, it just kind of goes, you know, ching, you know, right on through, and you don't really relate to it. But Babylon is very significant. And so what I want to try to do in a couple of lessons is put a face on Babylon, so to speak, so that when we see it, we'll think about it. Say, well, what matter does it make? Well, for one thing, and the most significant thing from my vantage point is that the prophecies that are stated about Babylon, and there are a lot of them in the book of Isaiah and Jeremiah, point up the benefit of understanding fulfilled prophecy. Because today, in the world that we're in, there's a whole lot of people that just don't believe the Bible. And you try to talk to them about the Bible, and they, well, you know, why should I believe the Bible? Well, you know, when we were younger, when some of us were younger, that wasn't such an issue. Oh, yeah, there were atheists around and so forth, but for the most part, people believe the Bible. It's not so today. It's probably a very small minority. And I think fulfilled prophecy is one of the most powerful tools that you can use to show people this has to be the Word of God. Now, the lesson tonight is sort of introductory in terms of some prophetic statements that are made, and next week, we're going to get into some of the juicy parts, the fulfillment of those prophecies, and there's a couple of things that I think you're going to find especially intriguing and interesting. So, anyway, that's kind of the reason I'm headed that direction. Now, Babylon, and what we're talking about, of course, is over there in that Tigris-Euphrates area, river valley. Over here, up here in the corner, you see you've got the Euphrates River going up this way and the Tigris going that way. Remember, Nineveh, we talked about this morning, was up this direction. Babylon was, of course, it's not there now, but the ruins of it, south of about 50 miles down the river from another town that we've become acquainted with named Baghdad. And so it's in that part of the world that we're talking about. And as I said, it's prominent in Old Testament history. It starts back in Genesis chapter 10, where we read about the roots of Babylon being established. And, of course, you remember the Tower of Babel. That was over there in that same neck of the woods too. But it straddles the river. And you can see on this diagram here,
the Euphrates River is portrayed as going through the city. Now, that's going to become very significant when we talk about the fall of Babylon a little bit later on. Herodotus described the city like this. Now, some have questioned the accuracy of his statements, but we don't have anybody else to, you know, talk to or read from, so this is about the best we can do. He said that the city was about 15 miles square. That is, on each side, about 15 miles on each leg of the walls. He said it was surrounded by a moat, and the moat that went around the wall. Now, on this diagram, they don't have it an exact square, but the moat that went around the outer walls was 260 feet wide. Now, a football field is 300 feet long, so we're talking about, you know, roughly 3/4 of a football field. Round numbers, okay? Don't hold me to the decimal point there. So, you know, that's a wide moat. And in addition to that, the walls were just absolutely humongous. Let's see if I can get rid of this. Go back over here. The best guesstimate is that the walls, for the most part, were about 300 feet high. Now, you know, that's maybe about a 25-story building. Okay. Though that's huge. And that there were 15 large brass gates. The walls in most places were about 75 feet thick. So if you've got a 75-foot thick wall, 300 feet high, you've got something that's probably going to withstand a lot of the onslaught of an enemy. And we're going to learn about that a little bit later on, too, about how the Babylonians would sit up there on top of the wall, and they would yell down to the ones that were trying to breach the walls and saying, you're not ever going to get in here. Matter of fact, you won't get in here until mules foal. Well, you got to know something about mules and foaling to know what that means, because mules are sterile. And so they're not ever going to have any little mules. And so, in other words, you're not ever going to get in here. And so they just kind of, you know, snub their nose at anybody that would come and try to attack them, and then they'd go off and have a party. That is, the people that were inside, because they knew that their enemies couldn't get inside those big old walls. So that, again, if we kind of put this face on Babylon, we're going to have a better appreciation, I think, for some of the passages that we're going to be looking at. The king that was the most well-known of all the kings of Babylon was Nebuchadnezzar. He reigned for 43 years. And he is allegedly responsible for building one of what's been known as one of the seven wonders of the ancient world, were the Hanging Gardens of Babylon. In other words, this was a botanical marvel. Again, I've seen some artist renderings of it. Of course, nobody knows exactly what it looked like, but you know, this huge monstrosity of a building with, you know, plants all over it and everything, baskets and whatever. Now, the reason he built that was because he had a homesick wife. And she was from Midian, and she was used to having a lot of plants around. And so he was trying to make her happy. Well, so how significant was Babylon? Here are some excerpts from some of the passages that we have in the New Testament, in the Old Testament, that tell us about Babylon. For example, in Daniel, the 4th chapter, this is where Nebuchadnezzar is standing up on the roof of his dwelling place. And he's looking out over this, you know, huge city. And again, you know, the river, the canals, all the buildings, and the temples to Marduk, and all of these pagan gods that they worshipped. I mean, it was an awesome sight, I'm sure. And he said, "Is not this Babylon the great that I have built?"
So it was a great city. Isaiah chapter 13, where we were reading just a moment ago, which is the oracle of Isaiah against Babylon, calls Babylon the beauty of the kingdoms, the glory of the Chaldeans' pride. In other words, it was a magnificent kingdom, not just the city itself, but the extent of the power that they exerted over that part of the world was rather significant. I've got a map here coming up in just a minute. Take a look at that. Isaiah chapter 47. Now, this again is another of the prophecies about the fall of Babylon, but he says of the Chaldeans, "For you will no more be called the Queen of Kingdoms." So apparently, at some point in their history, and it probably was about, historians have sort of bookend the Babylonian reign of power from 614 to 539 B.C. That's relatively short. But during that period of time, it was known as the Queen of Kingdoms. And then in Jeremiah 51, and by the way, Jeremiah 50 and 51 are Jeremiah's oracle against Babylon. "You who dwell among many waters, abundant in treasures." Man, they had gold, they had all of the fineries that the world could offer. So, those are just a few of the inspired statements that give us some information about Babylon. Now, here is one of the maps that I found. And if you kind of couple it with those other statements, you can sort of see if they were believing all that, how great they were and how powerful they were and how everybody looked up to them and called them the Queen of Kingdoms, all that kind of stuff, then you would sort of get the idea that, hey, you know, nothing's going to hurt us. We're sort of invincible. And the green areas represent the extent of their power. Up the Fertile Crescent, the Tigris, Euphrates Valley, and over and down the Mediterranean coast. And here you've got, you know, Jerusalem and Sea of Galilee right there, Damascus here. You remember those trade routes went up, around, and down, and came through Damascus. The King's Highway came through Damascus and went down here. And then they went along the coast here over into Egypt. And then apparently they even had over along the northern Mediterranean coast, which we recognize as Turkey, and over in there, and Cyprus here. So, I mean, they were a world power. But God used them, and I think Rick mentioned this in his class this morning. You know, just like he used Assyria, God used Babylon, and he was going to use Babylon as an instrument in bringing the kingdom of Judah to her knees. Jeremiah chapter 25. "Thus says the Lord of hosts, because you have not obeyed my words, behold, I will send and take all the families of the north, declared the Lord, and I will send to Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, my servant." So this is Jeremiah speaking to the people of Judah and says, God says, I'm going to use Nebuchadnezzar. He's my servant. "And will bring them against this land and against inhabitants and against all these nations round about. And I will utterly destroy them and make them a horror, a hissing, and an everlasting desolation." Now, over in Isaiah chapter 14, let's read a few verses. "You said in your heart, I will ascend to heaven, I will raise my throne above the stars of God, and I will sit on the mount of the assembly in recesses of the north, and I will ascend above its heights. I will make myself like the Most High. Nevertheless, you will be thrust down to Sheol, to the recesses of the pit." Now, it sounds like that Nebuchadnezzar is the good guy. Everybody else, especially Judah, is the bad guy. And so we give Nebuchadnezzar, a pat on the back and a white hat to wear. But that's not the way it worked. No, God was using these pagan nations to accomplish his purpose. And so later on we find out, and we already knew that, but of course we find out from the prophets that Babylon is going to be punished for her wickedness. Jeremiah chapter 50. Israel is a scattered flock. The lions have driven them away. The first one who devoured him was the king of Assyria. And the last one who has broken his bone is Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. Therefore, thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, behold, I am going to punish the king of Babylon and his land just as I punished the king of Assyria. So these haughty kings, and of course in the book of Daniel, we find out about how, you know, haughty Nebuchadnezzar was, you know, standing up there talking about how great he was and all the wonderful things he had done. And of course, he got a lesson in humility. But God makes it very clear that they cannot act in this ungodly way that they are accustomed to without impunity. And so he reminds, Jeremiah reminds them that, in fact, even though he used the Assyrians, he punished them, he used Babylon, he's going to punish the nation of Babylon. And in spite of her arrogance, again, they are not going to escape punishment. In Isaiah chapter 47, I want to read a passage. I don't have it up here on the screen, so if you want to follow along. Isaiah chapter 47, I'm going to start reading in verse 7. The theme of this chapter is that Babylon is going to be turned into the queen of widowhood rather than the queen of kingdoms. She's going to be like the queen widow, so to speak. You said, I shall be queen forever. This is verse 7. That's what Babylon said. And again, that haughty, you can't whip us, we're invincible disposition. You said, I shall be queen forever. These things you do not consider, nor remember the outcome of them. Now then, hear this, you sensual one who dwells securely, who says in your heart, I am, and there's no other besides me. I shall not sit as a widow, nor shall I know loss of children. But these two things shall come on you suddenly in one day, loss of children and widowhood. They shall come on you in full measure, in spite of your many sorceries, in spite of the great power of your spells. And you felt secure in your wickedness and said, no one sees me. Your wisdom and your knowledge, they have deluded you. For you have said in your heart, I am, and there is no one beside me. But evil will come on you, which you will not know how to charm away. And disaster will fall on you, for which you cannot atone, and destruction about which you do not know will come on you suddenly. You think you've got it made. You think nothing's going to happen to you. You're going to learn. Otherwise, God says to Babylon, kind of reminds me of people today. Well, we don't have to worry about anything. Everything's real cool. You know, I feel secure, and just like Babylon, I felt secure in my wickedness and said, no one sees me. And, you know, he said, you know, wisdom and knowledge have obviously escaped you. You don't know what you're talking about, but you're going to learn. So that's something that, in fact, they're going to have to look forward to. Now, interestingly, in the Chaldean archives, and there's been a lot of stuff that's been discovered, and the archaeologists have been digging around there for a long, long time, you know, way over 100 years. And they dig up stuff all the time, and you can find most of it now in a lot of the major museums, the Louvre in Paris, and the British Museum in London, and Berlin Museum, and then there's some others scattered around. But among the things that they found is that this, in fact, is exactly what the Chaldeans said. They wrote these things down on their archives, like, you know, we're nobody's going to harm us at all. So, again, what we have is the corroboration of secular evidence that fits right in with what we read in the Bible. Again, somebody said, why do you read the Bible? Look, here's what the prophet said, and you can, lo and behold, you can go and you can find the same thing written in their secular history. Well, let's keep on going now. In Isaiah chapter 21, the prophet said, and by the way, let's not forget this, we're talking 150-ish years before Babylon ever really got into a position of power. You know, Isaiah preceded Babylon by that about that period of time. Now behold, here comes a troop of riders, horsemen in pairs, and one answered and said, "Fallen, fallen is Babylon, and all the images of her gods are shattered on the ground." Now, fallen, fallen, that's present tense. In other words, it sounds like it's already happened. And you say, well, Isaiah lived, you know, 150 plus years. Actually, it's almost 200 years before the fall of Babylon. You know, how so? How could he say it's already a done deal? Well, this is a figure of speech called a prophetic perfect. In other words, the prophet, inspired by God, could say it as if it had already happened because it's going to happen. Because God's going to make sure it happens. So, 200 years, roughly, before the city fell, this statement was made by Isaiah. Now, before, she had been characterized as one that had not been touched in the imagery of her virginity. "Come down and sit in the dust, O virgin daughter of Babylon. Sit on the ground without a throne, O daughter of the Chaldeans. For you shall no longer be called tender and delicate. Take the millstones and grind meal. Remove your veil. Strip off your skirt and cover the leg and cross the rivers. Your nakedness will be uncovered. Your shame will be exposed. I will take vengeance and will not spare a man." Again, this is what the prophet is saying is going to happen to Babylon. And, of course, God is the one that is going to bring this to pass. And then in Jeremiah, again, in the 50th chapter, verse 2, "Declare and proclaim among the nations, proclaim it and lift up a standard. Do not conceal it, but say, Babylon has been captured. Baal," that was one of their pagan gods, "has been put to shame. Marduk," which was another one of their pagan gods, "has been shattered. Her images have been put to shame. Her idols have been shattered." Sounds like it's going to be a rather significant downfall, not just a little skirmish. Jeremiah 51, "Suddenly Babylon has fallen, been broken. Wail over her, bring balm for her pain. Perhaps she may be healed. We applied healing to Babylon, but she was not healed. Forsake her and let us each go to his own country, for her judgment has reached to heaven and towers up to the very skies." They're going to try to heal her. In fact, one of the interesting things is that initially the downfall of Babylon was sort of semi-bloodless, we might say. It was left as a city, and then gradually, over a number of years, and the demise just kept going and going. They sort of rebelled a little bit under Belshazzar, and then that's when the final destruction came, is when Belshazzar was the king. But we'll be getting to that a little bit later on. So, let's consider again, let's relate this. Let me back up, just put that back up there. Relate this to what we've been studying on Sunday morning. Josiah reigned from about 639 to 608, and then he died at the Battle of Megiddo. And then, of course, Jehoahaz took his place. He only lasted about 3 months, and then he was taken captive to Egypt. And then that's where we bring Jeremiah into the picture, and he starts prophesying about what's going to happen. And I had a lesson on that last week, a couple weeks ago. Then Jehoiakim, you know, Josiah's second son, he came to Judah's throne, and he reigned about 11 years. And then during his administration, Jeremiah just kept pleading with the people, turn back to God, turn back to God. But as far as we know, nobody was listening to him. And so finally, in 605, now, 605 is an important year, because the first attack on Jerusalem by the Babylonians was about that period of time. That, you know, 605, 606, somewhere along in there. And so here in 605, here's what Jeremiah said. "And this whole land shall be a desolation and a horror, and these nations shall serve the king of Babylon 70 years. Now, we know about the Babylonian captivity. It was for 70 years. And here's where Jeremiah prophesied that, yes, the Judah would be taken into Babylonian captivity. It would last for 70 years, exactly. Then it will be, when 70 years are completed, I will punish the king of Babylon and that nation, declares the Lord, for their iniquity in the land of the Chaldeans, and I will make it an everlasting desolation. So he tells us that, again, the Babylonians are going to be punished, and it's going to be at the end of that 70-year period. Now, Isaiah gives us a little more information about how God's going to punish them. Isaiah 21:2, go up, Elam, lay siege, Media. I have made an end of all the groaning she has caused. Now, the she there is Babylon. And you look at the context of Isaiah 21. Now, you say, well, wait a minute. I thought the Medes and the Persians took over the Babylonian Empire. Well, they did. Well, who's this Elam? Well, in Isaiah's day, remember I said that we're talking, you know, 150-ish years, almost 200 years before the fall of Babylon. Persia was a non-entity, so to speak. Elam was the area where Persia took power. So in Isaiah's day, rather than calling it Persia, he called it Elam. Historically accurate. You know, exactly the same group of people in the same area. So it was Elam that he said, along with Media, that was going to be the instrument God used to punish Babylon. Isaiah 21:9. Now behold, here comes a troop of riders, horsemen, and pairs. And one answered and said, fallen, fallen is Babylon, and all the images of her gods are shattered on the ground. Well, we're going to find out about that too. But again, this is what God says through the prophet Isaiah is going to happen. One of the most, I think, profound statements in all of the Old Testament about predictive prophecy, I know there's a number of them, but this is one that just jumps out at you, is how Isaiah, inspired by God, actually names the one that is going to bring that punishment to pass, and that's Cyrus. Isaiah 44:28. It is I who says of Cyrus, he is my shepherd. Now, this was 200 years before Cyrus was ever born. How could Isaiah even know the name of the king that was going to be in power in the Medo-Persian Empire? Well, you know what the unbelievers and agnostics and atheists say? They say, oh, well, that was something that was written long after that actually happened and somebody just wrote it down pretending that they knew it beforehand. Well, that, obviously, Isaiah lived way before Cyrus was born. And so, I believe that it was an inspired statement from God. He said, and he declares of Jerusalem, she will be built. Now, we're going to get to that in our Bible study later on, whenever we have, you know, the Nehemiah and Ezra coming back from Babylonian captivity and rebuilding the temple and rebuilding the wall in Jerusalem. And Cyrus is the one that issued the decree, Ezra, the first chapter. And then in the next verse, again it says of Cyrus, thus says the Lord to Cyrus, his anointed, whom I have taken by the right hand to subdue nations before him and to loose the loins of the kings and to open up doors before him so that gates will not be shut. So Cyrus is the one that's going to be used by God to punish Babylon. So, one more statement from Isaiah chapter 51. Sharpen the arrows, fill the quivers. The Lord has aroused the spirit of the kings of the Medes because his purpose is against Babylon to destroy it. For it is the vengeance of the Lord, vengeance for his temple. The kings of the Medes. You know, I mentioned that Nebuchadnezzar was on the throne for about 43 years. But the 70 years of Babylon's, shining rule over that region. After Nebuchadnezzar, then we've got just one king almost right after another. His son, he died. Nebuchadnezzar died in 562. His son, Evil Merodach, he ruled for about 2 years, and he's actually mentioned in 2 Kings 25. And then came a fellow by the name of Nergalesar. He was on the throne for 6 years. He was killed in a battle with the Medes and the Persians. And then another fellow by the name of Labshah Marduk, he came to power and he was on the throne in 556, but he was assassinated after just a few months. And then finally, Nabonidus ruled from 556 to 539. And then his son Belshazzar was actually on the throne whenever Cyrus attacked Babylon. You read about that in Daniel chapter 5. And extra-biblical inscriptions have corroborated the fact that Nabonidus had actually entrusted the kingship of the capital city to his son while he was off in Arabia. And he was over in Arabia for about 10 years fighting those guys. And then whenever Cyrus started stirring up trouble over around Babylon, then he came back and he decided he was going to engage Cyrus, but he found out right away that he was outmanned, and so he hooked him. He tucked tail and ran, and then Cyrus continued his advancement against Babylon, and then finally captured the city, and that's next week's lesson. Now, looked at a lot of prophecies, but hang in there with me, because next week I think you're going to find it especially interesting, some of the things that we learn, not just from the Bible, but from secular history, about how Cyrus actually conquered the city and the impact that has upon our understanding of these prophecies that were made anywhere from, 200 to, 50, 70, 80 years or so before the actual fulfillment of them. Open your songbooks now to the hymn that Ken has selected. It's a hymn of invitation. We haven't talked about the plan of salvation tonight, but I anticipated that most of the people that would be here tonight understand what God's requirements are. And so this is especially an opportunity for any who are members of the congregation here, or if you're visiting with us and you have a particular need that we can help you with, then this is an opportunity for you to express that need, and we invite you to let us know how we might be able to help you while we stand and while we sing.